You're listening to an OTB AM podcast. You can watch the show or listen live every weekday morning at 7:45 AM. Subscribe to the OTB AM podcast stream for more stuff just like this. And a very good morning to you. Welcome along to Off The Ball AM. If you're watching us on YouTube, on Periscope, or wherever you're watching us, remember you can always just listen to us. If that's your preference, you can get on to offtheball.com, hit the listen live button, and we'll just be a radio show in the background as you go about your breakfast business this morning. It's 7:46 AM, and you're very welcome along. You can leave your comments with us. Just use the hashtag OTBAM on any of our social platforms, YouTube, Twitter, Periscope, and Facebook, and we'll be able to talk to you back. That's the whole point of it, really. Oh, and how are you?
Very well. How are you?
I'm good. I got distracted last night by the majesty that was the 2001 game in Thurles between Kerry and Dublin. I don't know why I flicked over in the middle of, like, the Liverpool game was brilliant, right? But I did. Might have been half time. And I sat there watching it and I was like, wow, this is amazing. Mm. It's like just a little bit of sun-drenched glory.
And it's not sepia-tinted. It was good football, was it?
Yeah, genuinely good football, yeah. Like, free-flowing. There's no... The quality of the defence isn't great, you would have to say. I mean, I think everybody could agree that. Some score taking in the first half, not great. There was a brilliant run by Colin Moran where he dribbles past three players, plays a 1-2 with Desi Farrell, and instead of just catching the ball and kicking it into the empty net, tries this sensational Dermot Connolly-style volley. And it... past the open goal. And the commentator, Stuart Canning... And he literally says, "Ooh, I pity him." it's like, uh-oh. When the commentator is pitying you for something in the middle of a big game like that, it's like, oh, God, poor Colin Moran.
A moment of menace for Colin Moran, I'm sure is how it was described.
Cut to Bertie in the... and that's him. That's a picture of Bertie there. And it's early in the game, so it's 1-4 to 2 points. We can see the score. Bertie sitting beside his daughter, the author, who's probably more famous than he is at this point, who's definitely world more famous. But, you know, there's no reaction from him. There's no, like, F that. And then Gerard Canning goes, "I hope Bertie Ahern won some money at the Galway races." Well, Ger, it turns out there was plenty of money in that tent.
Oh, my God. It's we kind of underappreciate what life might have been like if Dublin were successful during the Bertie era, or if Bertie was successful during the Dublin success era. That this kind of raging bull of a celebration sort of routine is what I would have expected from Bertie Ahern, but we never got to see it. It always felt that he was just a bit of dynamite waiting to go off as soon as Dublin finally won the All-Ireland. And it's a shame, really, that we never got to see that in full flow. I'm sure it happened somewhere, but the camera just doesn't pan to him anymore. It pans to Leo or to Endon previous occasions, just kind of politely clapping. But it was a bad omen, really, actually, wasn't it, for quite a while, the Taoiseach?
Yeah.
If we could go back through all...
Karmic retribution, I believe they call it. Mm. Offaly Hurling is still suffering for inflicting Brian Cowan on the country. That's what they did. It wasn't the lack of underage structures or the fact that their golden generation didn't go on and become great coaches. It was that they gave us Brian Cowan.
I'm surprised that Dignan or Dahi Regan haven't actually made that point on Twitter yet. I'm sure it's just such an obvious point, which is why they actually haven't taken to social media to point that out. The 2001 game, I must actually go back and watch it. Did you get to the Morris Fitz equaliser, or had you gone back to Liverpool at that point?
I went back, I've recorded it. And then I went through the air schedule and started recording loads of them. Lots of Kerry defeats. I guess they're good games when Kerry get beaten.
Kerry are a mortal county.
That's the definition of it being, you know, we need that little bit of something between the teams, preferably the favourites getting overturned.
Yeah, regularly. And the sort of, on any day, on any given day, anybody can win, whereas now it's like, that's not actually the case.
No, it's true. The best supporting actor, the Kerry football team in all other counties' greatest triumphs. It's a very important role you guys have.
Well, some of the best supporting actor roles have actually been better than the best actor roles quite often when it comes to the Academy Awards. So yeah. I'm not taking that away from any supporting acts.
We have a great show coming up for you today, and get to that in a minute. Oh, there, I'll tell you now. So Shane Williams is going to join us around about 9:05. We'll go over to Cheltenham to talk to John Duggan about 8:45. We have our own Cheltenham guide starting with Owen in about 5 minutes' time. That's the poll of polls. That's the tips of tipsters. We need a sexy name for that. We're going to talk to Johnny Ward a little bit later on as well. And the Shot Clock with Kieran Donaghy is coming your way at 8:10. Brian Cooper is our very special guest. I didn't realise that Brian Cooper and Kieran Donaghy both went to the same school. They're both Tralee men. And I was thinking about it afterwards. Tralee's pretty high achieving in terms of sport. Like, apart from the fact that it's festooned with Gaelic footballers. It's also like a heartland of Irish basketball, and it has really talented jockeys.
Yeah, not bad for a complete dump.
That's a joke.
That's a complete joke. Obviously, I love Tralee. Great atmosphere for a game.
Hate Tralee, it's mad.
I don't hate Tralee.
You're like, it's Shelbyville.
It's remarkable how kind of the rugged north of the county does produce all these people. Like, it's, yeah, it is. And it's the array of talent that they produce as well. Like, I mean, if you include Listowel in that, if you kind of draw a little circle as well out to West Kerry, from racing to Gaelic football to basketball, it's a pretty talented area. And you would like to think as well, you would like to know what they would have all been like as golfers, considering most of them become so obsessed with golf after they finish playing football or whatever it may be.
Just get them into it a little bit earlier and they could be world-class.
Who knows what they would have been, yeah. No, that's obviously a joke, just to clarify that.
It was just too easy
an open goal.
Yeah.
Because I thought you were going to say that. Where's the sly dig here, Ger? Because every time you say something nice about us, you always just follow it up with a backhanded compliment. So I just said I'd finish it off for you.
I've decided I love Tralee because you hate it so much. The beef is real. It's coming your way at 8:10 this morning. It turns out that Sean O'Brien may actually be getting into the team for Ireland. That's the latest gossip on the back of the newspapers this morning. Earlier in the week, it looked like Dan Levy was going to be in the Ireland team. Now it looks like Sean O'Brien is going to be in the Ireland team. And it's helpfully pointed out in the newspapers this morning that this is the first time that Sean O'Brien and Warren Gatland have crossed paths since the Lions Tour. You may remember the Lions Tour, where Sean O'Brien played really well, scored one of the best tries of his career, one of the best Lions tries ever, and subsequently had some critical words to say about Warren Gatland. Warren Gatland joined us at a roadshow the following Christmas, and, well, he gave out stink. He was pissed off. That beef is real, it turns out. And we'll bring you that details of those clips a little bit later on. Let's go to the papers first, though. This is where we get to talk about Liverpool, because they were absolutely sensational last night. This is also the bit where you see how hard Owen is working today, that we haven't even divided up the newspapers the way we normally do. He's only looking at Cheltenham this week. How did you get on yesterday?
Good day yesterday. Yeah, I think most people had a good day yesterday. I think the bookies got torn to shreds yesterday after tearing the public to shreds the day before. So I want to say 1-1 going into day three. I always tend to find, I'm not sure, does the enthusiasm wane and therefore the attention wanes come day three? But I always find Thursday kind of brings back some grim memories over previous years.
You lose on a Thursday?
Yeah, I tend to. I'm not sure if that's the case for everybody out there, but Tuesday and Wednesday, it seems that, you know, months and months of research have gone into it, and you're kind of high on life that Cheltenham is finally here, and maybe you put in that extra bit of effort, or you send an extra couple of text messages to find that extra tip.
There's too many tips.
There's too many tips, certainly.
There was a information, too many tips.
There was a lot of tips yesterday, but a lot of them came through.
I had two horses in the same race finish and win and finish third. Otherwise, I would have been completely screwed. I didn't get on any of the early winners that the whole rest of the office was on. That's one of the best experiences in life, watching everybody around you win. And you're like, not actually on any of these horses. What's going on here? Masterclass in Munich. It's Virgil van Dijk, airborne, having scored the decisive goal, the 3-1 win. He scores the second. He is now officially the best defender in the world. He's added goals to the already amazing defensive qualities he's had. It is now not up for debate anymore. Van Dijk has been the best signing that Liverpool have made in a long time. And he's worked about five times what they paid for him.
Of course it's up for debate. Like, you can't just say he's
the best defender
in the world. Best defender in the world.
Give me five defenders who are in the conversation.
Sergio Ramos. Well, all you need is one to have a debate about it. You don't need five people to have a debate about
Sergio Ramos today.
I think it's still a conversation today. I think it's still a conversation.
Sergio Ramos today.
Yeah.
How are Real Madrid doing this season?
But, like, how did they get on 10 months ago when they came up against Liverpool in the Champions League final?
That's not today.
I know it's not today.
He's too busy becoming a...
But, like, how did they get on against Ajax? They lost. Who were they missing? Sergio Ramos?
Byrne set for Ireland start is the headline on the rugby bit here. So it looks like Tadhg Byrne is set to become the 35th player used by Joe Smith in the 2019 Six Nations. This is because there was a bit of an injury to Henderson, and He was tempted to play the former Scarlet player against France last weekend, only for Byrne to say he had some soreness in training. So we'll see. And Tony McCoy has launched an attack on one of the most powerful racing officials in the UK, suggesting that because Brant Dunshay is Australian, he's unsuitable to make judgments on jump racing. I think that's not necessarily just the framing of the conversation. We'll get into that a little bit later on. We'll try and get the lowdown on that from Johnny Warden. We have him on. Mane leaves Bayern in a spin. Sadio Mane is absolutely sensational. No time to think about it. Yeah, I will just do a little shimmy around Manuel Neuer and then clip it into the far post.
He's absolutely unbelievable, isn't he?
Give him a couple of minutes to think about it and he's like, oh, too many options. But that was sensational.
He's flying. Like, that's always the situation that I thought was going to be the case with Liverpool, was that if Mo Salah ever ran into a bad bit of form, well, they've got other attackers that are pretty bloody good at football. Now, I'm not sure that anybody foresee the heights that Sadio Mane will actually reach post-Christmas, because he's doing it this year on a level that we haven't seen from him before in his career, and he keeps getting better. Liverpool, we talked about this quite a bit already this season, that it's like, do you pick the Champions League or do you pick the Premier League? And everybody's like, well, you've got to pick the Premier League. And as the year has kind of raged on a little bit, it seems that Manchester City are kind of more capable of actually lasting the course of the Premier League. And it kind of comes back to the same situation that we were in last year, that, you know, Liverpool on a one-off day against Manchester City or against one of the best teams in Europe are more than capable of taking them down. The Champions League just suits them better, and I don't think that's changed too much this year. It's no disrespect to Liverpool. They have got better this season and they have got closer to winning a Premier League title. That's pretty obvious. But I still think that they're far better suited to actually winning the Champions League. They would love to get Manchester City again in the quarterfinals this year and play them again in the next round.
I think the point that Jurgen Klopp was making in his post-match press conference is really interesting. He's talking about them being back. Scoring three goals here is massive and a big step up for us. A big, big step. We'll see what we can do with it, but it is a fantastic sign. We set a mark for Liverpool tonight that we are back on the international landscape as a football club. I'm really happy about the result and the fact that we are through. I knew we had a chance, but I didn't expect it would happen. But the boys made it happen and it was really brilliant. I think this is the whole point. That, like, when they have flashed before, when they came from nowhere under Rafa Benitez to win the European Cup, that team was already breaking down in various different ways. When they reached the final last year, it was like it was either another flame up from nothing because Mo Salah was sensational, and was he going to be able to sustain it? But actually, they were buying right around him and they were bringing players slowly into the team and everybody was improving. And if you think back to the season that they had under Brendan Rodgers, it was completely based on the fact that they had an attacking trio, one of whom was about to leave in a massive transfer in Luis Suarez, who was practically unmarkable at that point, but it wasn't sustainable. Now it feels sustainable. Now it feels like they have everything in place for this to be something that Liverpool, every season, will be a threat in the Champions League, no matter what group they're drawn in, no matter who they reach in, they're up against in the knockout stages. And that's, like, all you want from a team. You can't guarantee winning a league. You can't guarantee winning a European Cup. But you have to be giving yourself a chance to do it. And if they stick with this, they will win a European Cup and they will win a league, because it's just going to happen.
Yeah, definitely. The thing is, like, you look at the possibility of them saying winning the Champions League. If Liverpool win the Champions League, let's just forget about the Premier League for a moment. Like, where do they rank in terms of great British sides this century? Or like, if you even widen the net a bit further, like, I don't know, just like looking them up against Bayern Munich last night, they kind of remind me of when Bayern were at their most recent peak. So under Pep, when they beat Dortmund in that Champions League final, for example. I don't know, there's echoes of that Bayern team in this current Liverpool crop, because when you think of all the great European teams over the past 10 years, post Alex Ferguson and that Manchester United team, you think of Ronaldo's Madrid and you think of Messi's Barcelona. Outside of that, you look at Bayern Munich. Who was the superstar there? Well, they had a collection of superstars, and I think there's something similar. I don't want to say that they play football the same way, but there's something similar, and I kind of feel the same way when I look at this Liverpool side.
I think the other thing to note is that everybody's saying, oh, they've changed their style this year, they won't be able to go to Munich and do what they would have been able to do last year with the quick counter-attacking and the high press. And it's like, all they've done is develop. So now if they need to do one thing, they'll do it. And they're smart enough and they're experienced enough now to be able to do whatever the game plan requires of them, as opposed to we're only playing the way we're playing in the Premier League when we play the mediocre teams. They can be a high-press, counter-attacking side if they need to be. That's like the genius of a manager who's like, actually, you win football games in a myriad of different ways with different parts, different constituent parts playing different ways. The Sadio Mane going around Manuel Neuer is on the front of the Examiner this morning. There's also a picture of Michael O'Leary kissing, I presume it's Tiger Rowe. It is, yeah. Remarkable Little Tiger has melted Michael O'Leary's heart. The notoriously hard-nosed businessman Michael O'Leary has retired Tiger Rowe after an incredible victory yesterday. A four-time festival winner and a Grand National winner and a like massive comeback. Tiger Rowe was 25-1 in Navan 5 weeks ago and pissed home. Like, what was wrong with us?
Yeah. Maybe the idea that Tiger Roll just doesn't care about races such as Navan, or the connections don't really care about putting Tiger Roll into that position. It was just about getting the horse on the ground ahead of Cheltenham. And it turns out it's just a born winner of a horse. A bit of an... Can you call Tiger Roll an ATM horse? A lot of people around here certainly made a lot of money on Tiger Roll down through the years.
Yeah. I didn't back it yesterday. Stupidly. Anyway, there's an interesting piece from Jack Pitt Brook, which is obviously carried from the London Independent. The headline, if you can read it there, is Southgate jumps to defence of Rice after England decision. So Gareth Southgate names Declan Rice in his squad. Declan Rice tweets how happy he is. So it's on the back page as well of the London Independent at St George's Park. Now, is Kev Kilbane mentioned in the piece? He is, yeah. So this piece is lifted, unedited from the Independent News Service. Gareth Southgate has hit back at the easy criticism Declan Rice has faced. The decision to switch led to Rice facing some fierce criticism, especially from former Ireland internationals such as Kevin Kilbane. Yesterday on the show, we brought you Kevin Kilbane versus Nathan Murphy. Today, we're bringing you Kevin Kilbane versus Gareth Southgate. Who's it going to be tomorrow? Donald Trump, Barack Obama.
The beef is real.
The beef is real. Here we go. I saw a really good article that Eni Aluko wrote on dual nationality as well. For me, it was easy. I could only play for England. So there was no question in my mind. For lots of people that commented on Rice, that was the same. There were others who have commented despite the fact that they didn't play for the country of their birth. So they have benefited from some of the rules that are there. I mean, you know, England went out and kind of raped and pillaged their way around the world, and so therefore built an empire on the backs of the slaves that they took through centuries. And as a result, the people who went to live in England might have some fairly deep-seated roots with the countries that were colonised. This is kind of one of the natural byproducts of going out and stealing the wealth of other countries, is that their people come to, you know, try and get some benefit from being colonised. That's why loads of Irish people, after you starved us out, ended up going to live in England. And you're going to have to get used to that. And some of those people will want to play for Ireland because they're Irish. That's how that works.
Is it?
Yeah. Yeah, Kevin Kilbane is entirely entitled to play for Ireland and to consider himself Irish, which is kind of the point that Gareth Southgate's missing here, that he benefited from the rules. Did he?
It does.
I mean, he didn't benefit from the rules.
Like, it kind of suggests to me, when you kind of bring up rules, that there was some sort of deliberate act on the part of a player like Kevin Kilbane to actually go and make himself Irish. If that makes any sense. As in, he took it upon himself to declare for Ireland because he wasn't going to be involved with England. When you kind of bring up rules, that's kind of what it suggests to me, when clearly it couldn't be further from the case.
So I don't think anybody in England knows that, because they don't know any of their history. They're not taught their history. They're taught that, like, oh, all these countries asked us to come over. You know, there was a Strongbow everywhere who brought us over and said, here, take all our treasures and money and minerals and herbs and spices, not herbs, and you can have our oil, whatever. You can have whatever you want. Just take it. It's great. And we're going to take your footballers if they're any good. That's the trade-off here. We'll get all your stuff, and then if any of your footballers are any good, we'll pick them off at the last minute too. That's a good deal for the colonised, isn't it?
Potatoes for players. That's the name of the official name of the scheme.
Pretty much, yeah. you're going to get in trouble for that. The Racing Post today, staying powers. Young Prince Paisley Park set for a thrilling race against the machine Fahin in a classic stairs hurdle confrontation. It's too soon to be making jokes about the famine. That's the legends deliver. Heaven for punters after hugely popular victories for Altior and Tiger Roll. An Altior Tiger Roll double yesterday would have like paid decent. 2.5, 3-1, would it? I'm making that up.
Don't tell me that. Because I had a treble with two of them and Delta Work, who let me down.
You're just getting greedy there with the treble.
Yeah, but it was only about 6-1.
Okay, well then maybe I'm wrong. Maybe it would have just ended up at evens. But a rapid response: Gunners won't waste any time in bid turnaround tie. It's like, yeah, those match previews where you're being, they're trying to tell you to bet on an early goal. It's like, come on. And then, sorry, the Telegraph this morning: Klopp's men make it a full English. Liverpool stunned Germans as four Premier League teams reached Champions League last eight for the first time in a decade. I mean, it's slightly. Manu Tuilagi is turning his back on a £2.5 million move to France. What the hell is wrong with him?
Is having them woken up to the idea that, you know, there's another little model here across the Irish Channel that might be working? Across the Irish Sea that might be working?
He's going to stay with Leicester for £500,000 a season and an extra £25,000 for England appearance. Getting bad advice there, Manu.
Back page of the Irish Daily Mail this morning is a Fab Four. Mighty Van Dijk puts Liverpool through, and Kearney and Burns at the start against Wales is the team news for the Six Nations game this Saturday. The back page of the Sun then is a Fantastic Four, full house for Prem and nine Germans, says the back page of the Sun. And EI Sadio, I've won it for the cop, says the back page of the Mirror. And Mickey Hart says, we've never faced a team like this. He's talking about Dublin ahead of their clash in Croke Park this Saturday evening. The back page of the Irish Daily Star then is By Dream Believers. Mane Salvo leads Reds to victory. And Elliot's on a roll at the last. It's Tiger Roll dominating the Cheltenham headlines. And it's Sadio Mane there celebrating on the back page of The Guardian this morning. Magic Mane, strikers double sees Liverpool cruise past Bayern into the last eight.
All right. Let's head over to Cheltenham and join Johnny Ward for the first time today. Johnny, how you doing? Oh, we're getting to him 1 second now.
The tension is killing me.
Yeah. I don't know if he was up or down after yesterday.
Neither do I. Monday was obviously tough, or Tuesday was a tough day for everybody. I think yesterday, everybody was a winner yesterday in some respects. If you're a tipster, you would probably would have tipped the winner at some point yesterday. We'll get to our tipster table in a little while, or a tipster kind of rundown. But I'm not including anybody who tipped Altio yesterday, for example.
As a winner?
Yeah.
I mean, you have to, though.
I would have tipped. If I was a tipster, would have tipped Altio.
He had, and also nearly, I don't know, was not as impressive as a horse that heavy odds on should be. Like, made a mistake early in the race and then was challenged all the way to the line. Only wins by a length or two lengths in the end, or length and a half. Johnny Ward, good morning to you.
Good morning, how are we, Ger?
Yeah, what kind of a day did you have yesterday?
Good, yeah, had a couple of winners. The main one would have been Band of Outlaws in the Fred Winter and City Island for Sean Mulryan in the first race. Two wins for Martin Brassel, which is great going. Two wins for Mark Walshfather, which is great going for a guy who probably hasn't made much of an imprint at Cheltenham. But I think Punter's probably gone on a little bit better yesterday. The first day was quite tough. But going into halfway, the bookmakers will be ahead.
Johnny, where are you? As a matter of interest, it looks like a nice leather seat you've got there.
Yeah, it's Cafe Nero. I've already been chastised for having off the ball on too loud because I've got my headphones.
Oh no, all right. Oh, Cafe Nero's always decent. Come here.
England, he was very polite.
Say that again?
Being in England, he was very polite about chastising me. Do you want to get into an extension of the anti-English rampage you're on about?
No, come on. It's not anti-English. It's just a misunderstanding from Gareth Southgate of what the actual rules and regulations and the downside of colonisation is. You know, sometimes you have to accept. All right, let's. I want to ask you about the big story from yesterday, though. Tony McCoy went off on one about a couple of the suspensions that the jockeys were given. What's the background to this? Can you catch people up on this who maybe were just looking at the betting and the winners and losers yesterday?
Yeah, this happened on Tuesday. It was the last race on Tuesday, the National Hunt Chase, and effectively there were only four finishers, which is very unusual, and there was a fatality in the race. The horse that I tipped, Ballyward, he fell under Patrick Mullins, and sadly he had to be put down. But four finishers was very unusual because the ground was bad, but it wasn't atrocious bad. And basically the horse who finished a remote third, Jerry's Back, His rider, Declan Lavery, was among, I think, three riders to get a suspension, and the BHA found that he had basically continued in a race where it was contrary to the horse's welfare. In other words, he should have pulled the horse up. So he got a 10-day ban for that, and there was also a ban for the horse who finished fourth. Essentially, the BHA were banning him from keeping going on a horse who was tired, and Tony McCoy rightfully came out and lambasted them yesterday. And basically, that's the background. And the BHA were under a lot of scrutiny and I think ridicule really for the statement, where they basically said about the horse's welfare, he should have stopped riding. But like, I mean, that's like if you're running a marathon, is it in your welfare to keep going if you're absolutely flagging after 25 miles? That's not how sport works.
No, and I'm sure there's prize money for finishing fourth, and also it's a finisher at Cheltenham. What the hell? And McCoy did suggest. And
sure, if you finished third in that race, I think it was like five-figure sum for the owner, and money for obviously connections, and also if you backed the horse each way, which a lot of people would have. You know, the horse wasn't showing any ill effects after the race. It wasn't like he was about to drop dead or anything like that. And that's what national racing is. It's tough going, and the BHA has really kicked itself in the foot. I spoke to somebody from the Irish Turf Club about it, and he was basically laughing at this decision.
So on Twitter late last night, you were saying Sancta Simona at 20s tomorrow looks the bet of the festival. What's the story with that?
Yeah, she is the same owner as Epitant, who's in the race as well for JP McManus, but she's a huge price. The only side concern is the ground. There's been a little bit of rain this morning, but I think the ground will be fine for her. She was second in a grade one at Leopardstown when she last ran. She's a great each way bet, I think, a cracking each way bet, and under the inform Mark Walsh as well. Willie Mullins has an incredible record in that race. He's only been beaten in it once, and I think she's a huge price. I think they put her in way too big.
Yeah, so it's already into 14s where I'm checking now, and they touched 10s earlier, so hopefully everybody got on a bit of that nibble at 20 last night. What else are you looking at today?
I think Faheen has a chance in the big race. You know, he would really bring the house down. He's 11 years of age, but his form at 3 miles is very good. And I wouldn't underestimate him at all against Paisley Park. That's obviously in the Stayers Hurdle. In that race as well, Super Sunday goes in that race. I think he's interesting. Two probably stronger selections are Sire de Berlay, who runs in the Pertemps, the 3 mile handicap, and Measure of My Dreams for Jamie Codd, who's already had two winners incredibly at the festival. That's running in the Kim Muir. So I suppose my main three today would be they're all decent prices, Sire de Berlay, Measure of My Dreams, and obviously Sancta Simona.
All right, Tony, we'll let you go, and hopefully you bring your earphones tomorrow. Good luck, talk to you later.
Thanks.
That's Johnny Ward being polite to everybody who's around him. Sancta Simona is already into around about 14 to 1, so I'm just going to check that on Odds Checker to see if there are any more changes on that one. And that is and the 450 at Cheltenham. Sancta Simona is the one that was kind of the one that he was saying to get on last night. So do you want to do your bit here?
Yeah.
The hardest working man in showbiz this week.
Sancta Simona is actually, Johnny Ward is the first tipster this morning to tip that particular horse. Not tipped anywhere in the newspapers as far as I could see this morning. So if you're just joining us or if you haven't seen this all week, basically I've been going through all the tipsters in the newspapers every morning to try and see if there's any consensus for any race and to try and see, you know, who really are the best tipsters. We can show you who were the best tipsters from yesterday's action. At number five, we've Peter O'Hare. At number four, we have Brian O'Connor. And at number three, we got Niall Cronin. Now, interestingly, all three of them had three wins and one place, and all three of their wins were on the exact same horses. They all tipped Tiger Roll, Band of Outlaws, and Envoy Allen. At number two, then, we had Chris Cook of the Guardian, who is flying this week. He was the number one from day one, number two from day two, so he is the number one tipster overall. He tipped City Islands, Tiger Roll, and Envoy Allen. And then Katie Walsh had a stellar day yesterday. She's writing in the Herald this week. The Herald's been very, very strong in terms of tips this week. She tipped three winners and four places yesterday. So that's an incredible record.
No losers.
From Katie Walsh. Katie Walsh has been tipping one horse per race. So yeah, that wouldn't be doubling up on anything. She was seven tips. It's an absolutely outrageous record from her yesterday. Her winners were City Islands, Tiger Roll, and Band of Outlaws. An incredible day from her. So we keep an eye on her tips today. Just to mention Steve Mason as well, who also tipped three winners. He's just outside the top five. He tipped Top of the Game, Envoy Allen, and Tiger Roll. Just a little bit of shorter odds. That's why he doesn't make the top five. And a shout out as well to Matt Chapman. He's riding in the Sun this week. He tipped two winners in three places yesterday. Four winners overall tipped this festival. And he had a massive outsider as well yesterday. So fair play to him. Let's get on to today's tips. We're going to start with the 1:30, the JLT Novices Chase. Today seems like a tricky one. I'm sure we'll get John Duggan's take a little bit later on as to how tough it is to actually pick winners today. There doesn't seem to be much consensus on any of the horses. That being said, Delta Work was hugely tipped yesterday, the most tipped horse of the week so far, and it didn't win. So of course there's no exact science to any of this, but at the half one, Lost in Translation just about edges in front in terms of the amount of tips that it's got. It's at odds of 3-1. You've got the likes of Tommy Lyons in the Irish Examiner, Peter O'Hare in the Irish Daily Mirror, his colleague Dave Mitchell, also Davy Russell, Matt Chapman, Tom Pepper, Eamon Hames, Anita Chambers and Robbie Power tipping Lost in Translation. It's Colin Tizard horse.
Lost in Translation drifting this morning to 7-2.
7-2, right, okay. You've also got Defi Desoy, who is the favourite there, and you've also got about seven tipsters tipping that. So as I say, nothing even resembling consensus in that one. We'll move on to the 2:10. Johnny Ward there tipping Sire de Berlay, but Thermosticles, I hope I pronounced that correctly, is leading the way in terms of consensus or anything resembling consensus. Only four tipsters though backing that. Brian Flanagan, Matt Chapman, Tony O'Hare and Kelly Walsh. It's at odds of 12-1, so definitely an each way shot. It's a Joseph O'Brien horse. So as I say, four tipsters leading the way in any race just suggests how far from consensus we really are in that one. At a 10-3 then, of course, is the Ryanair Chase. We've got Mona Lee leading the way on this front at odds of 4-1. Mona Lee, of course, the Henry de Bromhead horse. Rachel Blackmore is going to be on board this horse, and I don't think a woman ever won as a jockey a grade one at Cheltenham, so a bit of history could be beckoning there if Mona Lee comes out in front of that one, leading the way in terms of tipsters in the newspapers this morning. Had 3:30 then, it's the Stairs, and it's a pretty boring one here because the favourite is leading the way in terms of tips this morning. Paisley Park at odds of 7-4, tipped by tons of people this morning, probably I want to say the most backed horse or close to it this morning, and that one is there. Faheen, of course, also running there. Johnny Ward tipping that. Moving on then to the 4:10, Ciru de Lac at odds of 13-2 is leading the way in this one. Darren Norris, Marcus Armitage, David Coughlin, Matt Chapman, Aidan Coleman and Robbie Power tipping that particular horse in this one.
Ciru de Lac.
Yeah.
13-2 at the moment.
13-2, exactly. That's the one. 10-5 then. Epatante, as Johnny Ward mentioned earlier on, has got the most tips so far in this one. You've got 12 tipsters tipping that one, so a healthily tipped horse. But you've also got Cineria in this one at odds of 7-1, which has got the likes of Chris Cook and Michael Verney tipping that one. So a strong field of tipsters, I want to say, behind Cineria this morning. And then at 5:30, it's the final race. Any second now at odds of 10-1, tipped more than any other horse in that particular race. Any second now, Derek O'Connor is going to be the jockey on that one. So Tommy Lyons, David Coughlin, Andy McNamara, Rob Wright, Paul Keeley and Katie Walsh. Katie Walsh suggested there's an each way bet there in the 5:30. As I say, it's very, very hard to kind of pick one particular horse from what the tipsters are saying in any of the races so far today. So it could potentially be a tricky day. I will put up the piece on offtheball.com if you've missed any of those or you want to get a deeper look at the who's tipping who.
And we'll have a full Cheltenham Festival preview coming your way at around about 11:30 on all of our social channels. But now, the beef is real. It's Sean O'Brien versus Warren Gatland. And this has been brewing for quite a while. So if Joe Schmidt is watching this, and I know he probably is, come on, give us what we want. Put Sean O'Brien in the team for the weekend. Let's go all the way back to Sean O'Brien and Oisin Langan. This was a Bank of Ireland launch in Tulla Rugby Club. There wasn't very many people there. It's kind of a very relaxed environment. Sean O'Brien let the guard down. Here's what he told Oisin Langan way back in 2017. Have a look.
To be honest, I'd be pretty critical of it because I think we probably should have won the tour and we probably should have won it comfortably enough. I think there's a lot of learning to take from the tour in terms of the coaching setup as well, and from a player's point of view of how we dealt with things. But yeah, it's a weird one, I suppose, drawing a series. You know, we got caught a little bit the first day with a different game plan. They came at us with a different game plan and changed it up a lot, and we were lucky the second day probably to get the win when you look at it, because our discipline was so poor. But we had fought so hard in that game and put ourselves in good positions at the time. We probably didn't finish off a few scores that day, but then the third day, you know, it could have went either way at the end, you know, and kind of a decision went our way. But you know, you make your own luck in those situations. But I think looking back, like, probably a bit of frustration that we didn't get it right, you know, over the whole duration of the tour. But tough place to go and get a result, obviously. And I think before the tour, if you'd asked anyone, that said that the All Blacks would probably wipe us, you know. So we can be proud of some of the performance we put in. But, you know, I think as a player, it's one that probably got away from us. Yeah, well, I think, you know, the first week we definitely overtrained on the Thursday. And maybe the coaches were maybe panicking a little bit about getting the information into us and workload. And I think we've done nearly the similar thing on the last week. So maybe it's more of a coaching point of view in terms of taking lessons, maybe less is more sometimes on a tour like that.
Okay, so that was what Sean O'Brien said. And it kind of exploded a little bit. It seemed very straightforward. Here is Brian O'Driscoll talking about it a few days later. Here he is in studio. We got his take.
You mentioned Sean O'Brien there. Been in the news recently. We haven't talked to you since he named names.
Yeah.
It's very unusual for anybody to name names and single out individuals.
It is. It's not really the done thing. I suppose two things. I think you don't want to shy away from players and having a good level of honesty, because we give out about them being dull and offering nothing from a soundbite point of view. And I was very much part of that crew, because you represent a team. You don't want to give anyone opportunity to come back at you. So for him, his honesty in doing that, I applaud him. At the same time, what was in it from a selfish point of view, what was in it for Sean O'Brien? I don't know what win he gets out of that. There's nothing other than antagonising the coaches that were involved. He could have privately said those things and gotten, you know, and aired his grievances to the management, to the Lions board or whatever on the QT, and the point would still have been, would it still hit home. But to do it publicly, he's drawn all this heat on himself. He's, you know, now persona non grata in Wales because he's had a go at their head coach and Rob Howley. He's probably created an awkward situation any time he bumps into either those two coaches going forward, of which will happen regularly.
Yeah.
So
it's going to happen on the field as well.
I just don't see where the win in all of that is. I suppose the speed at which it moved is a credit to the interviewer and the station that managed to get the interview, because lots of people picked up on it immediately. And I, you know, before I was kind of wondering when he did this interview, having seen articles written later on that evening, and it was just off the back of the show coming out at 7 o'clock and off the ball, and the next thing, an hour and a half later, so, you know, the English writers were on it, and they were the Telegraph, and you know, they were. I suppose there were strong quotes as well.
That
wasn't as though he sugarcoated them.
Yeah, so we should specify, of course, that Sean O'Brien issued a statement on Twitter. We've got that for you now. To be clear, my views on the Lions tour were honest and genuine and solely with the intention of building on what was a great tour. Unfortunately, some people have focused on what I feel we could have done better instead of what we did well. I have nothing but respect for Warren and the whole coaching team, in addition to the rest of the backroom staff and squad of players, but I do believe we, the players and coaches, could have done better. Yes. Do I believe we could have won the series? Yes. Do I believe the Lions squad in 2021 would be better for this? Yes. If we don't look to build on and improve the tour to New Zealand, how can future Lions squads get better? It is a privilege and an honour to be called a British and Irish Lion, and I hope that this clarifies my position once and for all. He's doubling down. Good man, Sean O'Brien. He's doubling down. He's not having any of that nonsense. He's like, yeah, I asked those questions. I stand over it. I'm a winner. I'm Sean O'Brien. He's like, come on. I fully agree with that. Yeah. But the beef is real, it turns out. Because, you know, Warren Gatland's a man who likes to wait a little bit and give his opinion. We'll get that in a minute. Brian O'Driscoll mentioned there about how it went around the world. Here's some headlines for you. Sean O'Brien slams in capital letters, in case you don't understand what the word slams means. Slams Warren Gatland for Lions tour training. We should have won 3-0. It's a big story in New Zealand as well. Lions flanker, we should have beaten All Blacks comfortably, in inverted commas. Sean O'Brien, I respect Warren Gatland, but the Lions could still have done better in New Zealand. The second one was from the New Zealand Herald. And then Warren Gatland continues war of words with Sean O'Brien over Lions. He lost his credibility, is what Warren Gatland said. It rolled on and on and on and on. Until a few months later, we got the opportunity to sit down with Warren Gatland and do a career retrospective, part of the Heineken Road Shows. A brilliant guest, in fairness to Warren Gatland, a really brilliant guest. And he didn't row back on any of his stuff. And it turned out he'd done some research on how often Sean O'Brien had won games against Warren Gatland coach teams. Have a look.
We had a good chat, and like I said, I don't have any problems with him. I just thought there was a better forum for him to address it than that.
You might be sending your Big 12 down the number 7 channel in the Six Nations for the first couple of minutes.
Yeah, I mean, the ironic thing is that kind of, if you're going to come out and be critical, then you've got to back it up with other things. So I went and had a look and went, okay, I've been with Wales for 10 years, and I'm thinking, okay, so in that 10 years... So Sean didn't play in the game in Chicago, where Ireland beat the All Blacks. And in that 10-year period, I know he's had a few injuries. He's only ever played on one Irish team that beat Wales. So to me, you've got to have a little bit of a better record than that. The beef is real. Ooh. So, you know, I'm just saying, I don't think that's kind of like me just going back and going, you know, if you're going to be critical, then you've got to make sure you've got something to back it up with, don't you?
Does it add a little bit of spice for the game, or are they two very separate entities?
For
the Six Nations, yeah, for the Ireland game.
Probably.
We've been denied the opportunity to see what would happen when Sean O'Brien went against Warren Gatland ever since. But no longer. Apparently today... It's going to be a team announcement, which includes Sean O'Brien and the team. Come on, Joe Schmidt, come on. Name the team. Put Sean O'Brien in. Put him in. Here's Gatland coming around to eventually saying that he hated coaching the Lions and vowing never to do it again. Admits he hated the Lions tour after criticism of Sean O'Brien. He vows never to coach them again. O'Brien criticised Warren Gatland. This is the Daily Mail. He vowed never to coach the Lions again as he admitted he hated the Lions tour after criticism from Sean O'Brien. So Sean O'Brien actually did Warren Gatland a favour by telling him, you didn't really enjoy this. And then Warren Gatland has had informal conversations over coaching the 2021 British and Irish Lions to South Africa. It's going to be, you know, third time round. So he changed his mind. Things change. People move on.
I hope not. I hope people don't move on. I hope the grudge is still there. I hope that time has actually just allowed the grudge to fester. And I hope that it becomes this, as you say, very, very real beef. Now, the thing is, maybe Warren Gatland saw the news that Sean O'Brien was moving to London Irish and therefore probably not going to be an Ireland player next year. Thought to himself, well, if he's not an Ireland player, doesn't have to be a Lion. I can be the Lions coach again.
Yeah. All right. We'll be talking to Welsh legend Shane Williams a little bit later on about the game this weekend and what he expects to happen. I'd say Wales are pretty confident that they're going to manage to seal another Grand Slam. Warren Gatland's third Grand Slam. It's not bad, is it?
Yeah, it's an incredible record. It's an absolutely insane record. You know, like, the thing is, we were kind of talking about this again the other morning, that would we be sick of just to see them do another Grand Slam because they make it look relatively easy?
I mean, it's them or England winning the championship.
Are we protective of the fact that we won the Slam last year?
No, that's history. We did that. Which would you rather England win the championship or Wales win a Grand Slam?
England win the championship.
Would you, yeah?
Yeah, because if Wales win the Grand Slam, we're going to be playing that crystal ball clip that we played yesterday morning, which features you saying Wales are going to win the championship again and again and again.
Yes, we will.
To be honest, I don't get...
Stitch it into the new intro on the show.
Couldn't care less about Warren Gatland's smug face. It's your smug face that I just don't want to see.
All right, we'll be back in a couple of minutes with Kieran Donaghy in studio for episode 5 of The Shot Clock. Here is Keith Wood talking about how Warren Gatland's management side has evolved and how he's now getting the best out of his Wales players.
There's been a lot of talk this week as well about Gatland, Keith, and giving him the credit that he deserves in some respect. Like, he's going for his third Grand Slam. Ireland have 3 in their history. His credentials are impeccable at this stage, really. This would be just a crowning moment for him.
Yeah, he's done great work in Wales. He really has. I mean, he went from the Irish game to the club game. I think he readjusted what he did when he went to the club game. He has far more of a manager's role, like almost like a soccer manager's role, and seems to do that far more. Relies very heavily on his coaches, and relies on his own man management and his selection. And I have to say, in the last number of years, his selection has been, it's kept the players on edge. And he seems to get the best out of the players. And he's revered in Wales, and he's done very well there. And it's been a while since they've won, but this is a big one for him. But he was already saying it in the game, how good should be winning a Six Nations next week, which I liked his phraseology. He did, you know, and I'm not sure that they'll have any level of complacency. And I think in many respects, a lot of the noise about what's happened in Welsh rugby, which is very upsetting for the players, also means that they want to be able to go out on a high. And he also was kind of teasing, this is his last Six Nations game over Wales. So as to whether he might do it with somebody else, and I know he's been talked about for taking over the English job as well. So look, he's delivered in a big way. If he gets the third one, he will put himself down as one of the great coaches in Wales.
You're very welcome along to episode 5 of The Shot Clock. The rules are pretty simple. We've got 8 talking points. We've got an interview. This week it's Brian Cooper. We get 2 minutes. The air horn sounds. And unless I'm finished making a point, we stop. That's it, isn't it?
Yeah, that's it. Simple as that. We're going to start it off. Irish rugby captains and myself and Joe were arguing about this for the last few days, about who's the right candidate, what's the right time. For me, it's Johnny Sexton, 34 years of age, coming into a huge year for Ireland. We've heard of his exploits before. We've heard of his mesmerising halftime speech when he was surrounded by older legends of the game at that time. He was the one that led the riot act. He's the one that pulled him out of it. He got a bit of stick for kicking water bottles last week. Just shows still how much he cares about, obviously, what he's doing, how much he cares, how much passion he has for the Irish jersey. And I just think it's his time to maybe take over after Rory for a few years. And if anything happened to Rory in the build-up to this World Cup, he'd be my guy to go for. That'd be my feeling on it. I think Gerard has a different opinion.
I can't believe you've turned your back on your Munster brethren. I didn't realise that the Kerry-Limerick rivalry was so intense. Kerry-Cork rivalry, Peter O'Mahony is the man to be the Ireland captain, obviously. The whole point here is that O'Mahony has been a Lions captain, has the temperament, doesn't have the miles on the clock, and could actually take us the whole way through the next World Cup cycle. It looks like Johnny Sexton's going to continue playing at least until the next Lions tour is over, and of course he would be a brilliant Ireland captain. I'm not taking away from him at all, but if you want to nail somebody down who is nailed down at number 6 for the next 4 years, and it's got to be Johnny Sexton, it's got to be Peter O'Mahony, because he is probably the only person who's guaranteed his position in that back row at the moment, and he's been captain of Munster for so long. So at this stage, it's not that big a leap for me.
Yeah, no, they're two unbelievable candidates. I just think I think Johnny's done enough in the jersey to give him, you know, that few years of Six Nations captaincy. And
you could give it to him and then give it to Peter O'Mahony afterwards if he's still around.
Yeah, but you're writing Johnny off leading us into the 2023 World Cup at 38, no?
Stranger things have happened, not many. All right, so that's settled. Peter O'Mahony's the next Ireland captain.
Oh, you're going straight into it. Well, I don't know. I think we go with Johnny on this one. I am, in a way.
Okay, Russell Westbrook wandered into the crowd and started shouting at a man and a woman. He was going to take them both down afterwards. In the post-match press conference, he had to say that he's never been involved in domestic violence, so he clearly wasn't going to hit the woman involved. You can see it there in the bottom. You can just about hear the expletives. I promise you. I mean, you know, maybe he wasn't talking violence. Maybe he was talking something saucier. Getting involved in the crowd, is this a good thing or a bad thing? Kieran Donnelly, what do you make of this?
Russell, it's very hard as a basketball player. They're right there on top of you. The fans are literally 2 feet away. You can hear everything they say. But he's volatile, and he speaks his mind. He's no filter to kind of slow down or what's on me there. He should probably realise at this stage of his career there's going to be cameras on him everywhere. And you know, there might be cuter ways to get that person back. You could fumble a ball and try and dive and save it and drill him with a shoulder and put him back into his seat. Maybe it would be maybe my way to go at it. But you shouldn't really be getting involved with fans that close to the sideline in the basketball game.
Of course, you've never got involved with fans ever in your entire career. There's no pictures of you out there in the world, Kieran Donnelly, ever doing anything to fans, is there?
No, I don't think so.
Oh, what's it? What's this? That's one half of the V sign.
That's it, yeah. I'm calling him over. That's actually my index finger, I think.
It's a long ring. What happened?
That was, I think it was 2008. St. Patrick was in the crowd, a very religious man, a very holy man. He says it wasn't him. He said a kid took his wooden spoon. I kicked a point to level the game in Castlebar in a very hostile atmosphere. As you well know, I'm well loved in Mayo. And my kick just tailed wide at the very last second, clipped the outside of the post and missed the equalising score. Jogging back out to my position, wooden spoon hits me in the leg. I turn around, see this big mad fella with a cape and a beard. And told him no in certain terms that I think of him with. With a gesture that I got in a lot of trouble for.
Did you get a ban?
I got a ban for a game. And one of my heroes in basketball, Timmy McCarthy, was working in Ulster Bank with me at the time and came down the stairs and said, looked at me dead in the eye and goes, "I'm very disappointed with your actions the weekend." And I was kind of like, "Timmy, are you for real?" And he was like, "Yeah, I don't know." And I was like, I was hurt after for a while because Timmy was my man. He was the coach that led the Garvey's Tigers to the first league. So I had to have a look at myself and afterwards, you know, it's so hard. But at that moment at the time, probably like Russell in that stage, things were going against him, things were going bad. That's when it's extremely hard to hold yourself when you're winning. I think Raheem Sterling did it very well there a number of weeks ago, smiling into the face of people abusing him on the sideline. That's probably the best way to answer it, but much easier said than done.
No, totally, and I definitely have sympathy with people who wait in the crowd. I think Eric Cantona did exactly the right thing to that guy, Crystal Palace, all those years ago. I thought that then, I think it now. Yeah,
now you heard it, Russell. Kung Fu kick is the answer. Next up on Shot Clock is goats adapting. So we saw Cristiano Ronaldo Tuesday night, absolutely unbelievable. Like, we know he's in peak physical condition, we know how much of a specimen he is, how athletic he is, but I think his quotes in the lead up to the game, you know, my passion, my experience is going to see us through this game. I just think for a team, I think how he's changed his position. So it's about how to adapt as you get older. We can't just do all the things we could do when we're 25. I had to adapt at 35, trying to stay on a Kerry team or stay on a Kerry panel, and just talking about how players change, like Brian O'Driscoll, Tiger Woods, and you know how you adapt. And I think Ronaldo is probably up there, and you could have LeBron as a 34-year-old as well with how to adapt your game to keep up with all these youngsters. I think those two have done it the best, and probably when you look at them, their feet, their physical condition is unbelievable.
We have this weird thing in sport, particularly in Ireland, where people go, "Oh, you're going to damage your legacy if you stay on too long." I think we need to completely rethink how we deal with people in the later stages of their career and give them credit for continuing to be relevant and to be involved by adapting their game and using all their nous and knowledge. If you think back to the great Munster team, they had this Project Maldini thing where they were going on, where they realised that one of the most important things that you can have is knowledge of how a game is going to happen, and in situational play make the right decisions, and you only get good at that by experiencing it and going through it. I think it's going to be interesting to see how the Dublin footballers use their experienced players this year, if they are the finishers, the value that they'll get from having Paul Flynn and Bernard Brogan and Kevin McManaman on the bench. And I think that actually greatness should be defined, and you should get extra super bonus points for being able to do this at latter stages of your career and be relevant irrespective of whether or not scoring a hat-trick or just being there for the last 5 minutes.
Absolutely. I think we're gone stone mad in the GAA for looking to retire people when they've got to certain ages. I remember we played against Pádraig Joyce. He was absolutely brilliant, and he was older, and they were saying he should retire after the game, and I'm kind of saying this guy has just been unbelievable against us, pulling all the strings. Stop trying to retire players once they hit 30, please. Let them play, let them finish when they want. As a piece of advice from a person who's just retired, retire when you feel like that you don't have any more to give. Play as long as you can. So don't listen to anybody. Don't listen to anybody outside.
On to our next point. That brings us very nicely along to it, because clearly the unretired basketballer sitting beside me here, Kieran Donnelly, he was instrumental last week as Tralee blew the entire Super League wide open with a massive home win against the then league leaders. There's now this amazing situation where we're hurtling towards the end of the season, where there's three teams who could possibly all end up in the same circumstances. We talked about it in the build-up last week, the hype that had taken over Tralee ahead of the Warriors' big home game. The whole place was absolutely rocking. I wonder if this level of fitness that he's getting at the moment might inspire him to rejoin the Kerry panel later on in the year.
No, that won't be happening. Good try, Jar. That won't be happening. But no, look, it was an unbelievable game. This is people coming into the game on Saturday night, but the queue was twice as long to get the tickets. And look, it was the best atmosphere I've ever played in front of a basketball game. I've played in 3 National Cup finals in the National Arena where there's been 2,000 people, but I think the crowd that we had the last night, plus what was on the line, plus the buzz before the game, the crowd were in the stadium an hour and 15 minutes before the game started in the Tralee Sports Complex. This is the warm-up right here that you're watching.
It's full of kids as well.
Oh, man. The kids' tickets absolutely sold out the door, and we know loads of, you know, we had a certain amount of kids' tickets, certain amount of adults' tickets to try and fit as many people as we could in, and we know for a fact that there was loads of kids' tickets bought by, like, adults' tickets bought for kids, that there were so many of them there. But it was an amazing night for us as a town and us as a club, and to get the win was special.
What about the fact that you're using shot clock to get in the heads and of your opponents the week before and psych them out? I mean, that's an interesting tactic. It works in basketball. Are we going to start seeing this happening in other sports in Ireland?
I don't know. I don't think I psyched them out too much. Jason Clean, we had him on last week. He was a brilliant guest on 5 minutes in shot clock, but he had 22 points and 18 rebounds.
So he did all right.
Yeah, he did good. He was a beast as he always is. But no, it was a titanic battle. We got on a mad run in the third quarter. Fergus Sullivan came off the bench and hit 3 threes for us. We just exploded out of the blocks, went from down 3 to up 14. And then they showed what champions are. They came out at the fourth quarter and reeled off 11 points in a row, and we were trying to get a timeout for like 2 minutes. Couldn't get one, and eventually got one to settle us down, and we were up 5. We came out then and just kind of settled down. We ended up winning by 11, but it's still a whole lot to play for. We got Marion, who were on 5 losses. Temple Ogre on 5 losses. We 4. We got to play Marion in a doubleheader in 2 weeks, Saturday at 5 in Dublin, Sunday at 5 in Tralee. So it could well be a 3-way playoff in the Irish Super League come the end of the season.
Well,
so
that would be class.
Mad, yeah.
That's exactly what you want.
Yeah. We're talking, yeah, Di Matteo, Roberto Di Matteo. As a Chelsea fan, I was thinking during the week the comparisons between him and Ole Gunnar Solskjaer. Both heroes at their respective clubs. Both scored massive goals. Both took over when the team were at a really low ebb. And you know, it just reminded me with the comeback that they had the other night in the last week in the Champions League, how improbable it was. And when I look at what Chelsea did that year, we were 3-0 down to Napoli away from home, came back and won 4-0 at home. There was the whole thing about the Barcelona game when John Terry got the famous red card when he kicked the back of Iniesta and he was gone. We had to win that game. It was amazing. Torres got the famous breakaway goal. You remember Gary Neville saying, "Is it written in the stars?" And then we go on with a defence that was all over the place to win the Champions League. So what I'm thinking is, could United win the Champions League? It's possible. If that Chelsea team won it that year, it's very possible that this United team could win it with all the teams that are out of it at this stage. Nobody will want to go to Old Trafford. They've got momentum. But if they do win the Champions League, and Solskjaer is the man, and everything is rosy in the garden, Chelsea sacked Di Matteo 4 months into the season the following year. So is Solskjaer, we've talked about it a few weeks ago, is he the man, or do you put your emotions aside and actually go with probably the best manager that's out there and try and really go after Pochettino? So what do you think, Joe?
I don't think Pochettino's the best manager out there. I think that if
who
if,
is
well if you're comparing these two situations, they're completely different. You had a completely trigger happy owner in Roman Abramovich who just decided, and also you had that coterie of players at the club who believed that they were more important than the manager, and in fact they were correct. Frank Lampard was far more important to Chelsea than any of the managers they had at that time. John Terry, like him or loathe him, was also far more important, and what they had was great players. What Solskjaer has is a relationship with the younger players from his time at the club, early doors, so he knows these guys, he's worked with them already. He's getting the best performances out of these that they've ever had, and that's a level of responsibility and talent that Di Matteo didn't have. Di Matteo was fluky, right place, right time. Those players managed their way through that as opposed to anything that Di Matteo did, and that's the difference between him and Solskjaer.
Yeah, no, don't agree. Chelsea started that with a tactical move that nobody else agreed on, but it actually worked, starting Ryan Bertrand left midfield. So Di Matteo has to get credit for the way we held out that day. We conceded in the 83rd minute. Drogba came on to be the hero, then the villain, then the hero again.
it all worked out for Di Matteo in the end. But where's he? What's he done? What have you done for me lately, Bobby Di Matteo? Let's move on to golf. So Rory McIlroy has been in the top 10 fairly relentlessly over the last couple of months. He started the season well. He hasn't started the season really well, but it looks like he's back in some level of form, except when he's in the final pairing on the final day. You think he's about to come good. What the hell is wrong with you, Kieran?
No, I just had this feeling in the pit of my stomach that...
It's indigestion.
Yeah, it's indigestion. I think he's playing well, and I think this Sunday blip is... I don't think it's an actual issue. I just don't think he's playing well. I really don't think he's suffering from nerves on a final day, or he doesn't have the temperament for it. I just have a feeling that he's never really performed in the Players' Championship. It is the fifth major. He wants to lay down a marker this year. He's been knocking on the door the last few tournaments. He's 11-1. Get on McIlroy for the weekend.
I just think that there is something there at the moment that's wrong with McIlroy when it comes to... It's not choking, because obviously he's getting himself in position over the course of the rest of the week, but if he's three strokes back on the final round and he's like out an hour and a half before the final pairing, then I would give him actually more chance of winning than if he was two shots clear and in the final pairing. I think that there is a psychological thing there at the moment that he hasn't dealt with some of the ghosts from, I would say, from Augusta. I know he's had big performances since then.
Yeah.
And I know he's won since then. But like when that is there, that's like, that's always there.
It's always there until you bust it open, and I think he's going to do it this Sunday. I'd love to see him in the final group.
I don't think he's busted open until he wins at Augusta. I think that's that ghost that always haunts him, like tapping him on the shoulder, going, "Remember that? Remember you discovered like an area of the course that nobody even knew existed at Augusta, Rory. Remember that? That's in you."
Yeah. That was a very mentally challenging one to take. I would say that last, but. As you said, he's won big tournaments since then, and you know, his game is just that drive he hit on the 17th last week. It was just ridiculous, and I just think he's going to just hit that note of form.
We'd love to see
the right time.
We definitely would love to see McIlroy back properly contending and just getting that Augusta office.
But the way Tiger's coming as well, you'd love McIlroy playing at his best. You'd love Tiger playing at his best. Dustin Johnson, all these guys. That's what we want, anyway.
All right, I'm delighted to say we've got Brian Cooper on the line. Brian, this Cheltenham Festival, I mean, we've been talking about it for months and months, and finally it's here. How are you feeling ahead of today?
Yeah, no, I've a nice ride today. Sam's profile. Looking forward to him. I think he's definitely got a good each way shout. And the more rain that's come, the better for him. And I think I'm looking forward to riding him now.
Yeah, because you talked about him when we met a couple of weeks back at the Road to Gold event with Bulmers. You were like, even back then, you kind of had a bit of a fancy for him. But things have definitely come right in terms of the weather and the ground and everything. All the indications are that things are going to go well.
Yeah, no, as I said, everything has gone smooth so far. And so we'll be a lot wiser now, about half one, 20-2 today now when we see the results.
Are you feeling a bit nervous ahead of this today? I mean, obviously, you know, everybody talks about it's the Olympics, National Hunt and all that kind of stuff, but it must feel different when you're actually in the build-up to it.
Yeah, well, I suppose it's kind of used to this year, because I was lucky to come, for the last number of years, I've come here with some very good rides, so it's kind of, you're just, once you're here now, you're in the mix of it, and... As I said, the nerves, it's more kind of you're just looking forward to getting ominous now and hoping everything goes right.
You're obviously in situation in case any other rides come up across the week as well. Is there any whisper of that happening for you yet?
It's funny there now. I got a phone call from Eddie O'Leary there just a minute ago to say a ride for them on Friday in the Albert Bartlett horse called Cap York. So it's my first ride for them in Cheltenham since I lost the job as well. So, you know, you never know, that we could be rewriting the books here.
Ah, here, that's great news, right?
Yeah, definitely. It's great to be here, you know, once you're taking part, and says you can't be turning down rides here in Cheltenham either, you know.
All right, well, let's get into the shot clock bit, Kieran. How do you know this guy?
Yeah, he's a Tralee boy, Brian. He was a Kerry fan. I have photos of him when I was a young fella, but I suppose we could never be prouder, Brian, that when you came home in 2016 and you crossed the bridge with the Gold Cup in your hand after that great win on Don Cassack. Come here, how proud of a feeling was that for you?
Gosh, look, it was unbelievable. You know, there was, and it's funny, I was actually showing one of the lads the video there in the Castle Bar that day. It was sent on to me of the crowd, and they're just going absolutely nuts. One of the lads was asking about it there. I still have it on the phone, like, you know, just, and the homecoming I got in Blenheimville that time, like, yeah, out in Quants. Like, just the support I got for it was unbelievable. And, you know, for me growing up to win a Gold Cup, it was what I always wanted to do, like, just like winning All Ireland finals. You know, for you with Kerry, and to do it at such a young age, it was just unbelievable.
Yeah, it's. I think of your own this time of year, because, you know, I'm in the rollover in the Greyhound Barn, the Castle Barn, like yourself. You're probably getting pestered, and I can imagine how many phone calls you get from plagues asking you about tips, and then coming back at you when these tips don't work. How much of a plaguing is Cheltenham week for a top jockey?
Sure, look, I suppose it's the time of the year where every human in the country becomes a racing genius. You know, they think they know everything just for this week of the year, and they might look at it then every other week. But I suppose it's the biggest week of our career, and everyone's in, wants to get a bit of insight. You know, if your friends, you know, there could be friends of friends who know me, and they'd be sitting here asking for a tip or what does he fancy. But sure, you can only tell them what you know at the end of the day. You know, and I've experienced the highs and the lows, and I've experienced plenty of the social media back, you know, of getting beaten on favourites, and, you know, that you've that part of it as well. But it's, look, it's, that's the way the game has gone in every sport, so you have to take the highs with the lows.
Speaking of that, and it's become, you know, it's a talking point, I think, about a lot of young sports people coming through is how to deal with, like, when I was young, and if we lost in All-Ireland and things went bad, you avoided the papers for 2 or 3 days, you avoided people for 2 or 3 days, and you kind of, you know, you lived in your own world and you kind of got away with it. But in this age, especially when you were so young coming through, and I think of all the young footballers and hurlers that are coming through now, and every sports person, that when that result doesn't go well for you or things don't go right for you, the backlash in social media, you know, should there be more maybe coaching put in how young people handle these kind of setbacks?
I think so, yeah. Like I suppose it's about 3 years ago now where it really started to kick in, and I was only 21 years of age. And I was, you know, I was right in the mix of it, and there, at that stage there was no real coaching, or you just had to go get on and deal with it. For me, I think it made me tougher and made me more of a man. But for now, younger people growing up, I think just things have even changed a bit more. It is tough for people. Like, and we see it, like I just was sitting here last night at home in the house, and I said, for the crack, I was typing Ruby's name, like, just to see what idiots were saying. You know what I mean? It's sad to think the type of people that are out there that get that upset over losing a few quid, you know?
Yeah.
But that's the type of people you're dealing with. And I suppose you look at it, if they can go to that lull of saying something like that, they haven't got much of a life. And that's the way I look at it. You know, they're doing that for a reason, and they're betting on their dole money, and they're, you know, they haven't got much to do with at the end of the week.
Yeah. That's hard to get to that point though, Brian, right? Because you've got to train yourself and you've got to go through it. And I'd say you might have searched your own name at various stages over the years. Like, learning that is actually a skill in itself.
You just have to. It's just if you can put a mental block over it, I think, and just think, look, people go to sports psychologists, but I just. And all this, but I just tell myself, look, I'm in this position for a reason. I've got to this position for a reason because of your ability, I think, and just try not to let anyone. You're here because your ability, and you're just block out what everybody else thinks of you. I think that's what I do anyway, and just, you know, just believe in yourself and just believe in your own natural ability.
I have one last point. It's interesting to hear you talking about watching back the video of the celebrations in the pub when you win the Gold Cup, because Brian O'Driscoll, when he was in not great form, went to see Enda McNulty, and they ended up watching videos on YouTube of him doing great stuff, and it was like, hang on a second, I actually am a really good player. I don't know what the hell. So the impact that had was something that he kind of always talked about afterwards, like looking at your own highlights is something, reminding yourself that things have gone really well for you, that you're capable of being the very best in the biggest race on the biggest day. Is that something that you get a benefit from?
Yeah, no, I definitely watch back replays of, you know, big days and good days, especially the year. I think the year that really kickstarted my career was signed by the 3 winners in Cheltenham. When I was only 19, and I'd nearly watched that back more than the Gold Cup, because that's what really put me on the map, and that's, you know, they were the really important times. And then if you're really down, there's an old video I have from one of the lads sent it on to me from the night I won the Gold Cup in the 21 club in Cheltenham that night, and I was shoulder high, and there's people, you know, the place has gone wrong altogether, you know, so they're the good days that you want to bring you back up again.
Yeah, fair play.
It's look, I tell you, Brian, every time you win in a way, in Tralee, we're all delighted because we're all on you, and we'll be on you today. But come here to me, when you're coming down, just your thought process, because, you know, people talk about, you know, the slack Ruby got on Tuesday for falling, and, oh, he, you know, it's an absolute disgrace, actually, the stuff that's thrown at him when he falls or stumbles over a fence. Like, it's obvious that he hardly meant to do it, but when you're coming to that first fence and you get out in front and you've got these 20 or 30 horses, will you just try and put me in your frame for a second as you're coming to that jump? What's going through your head when you hear there's 40 or 50 hooves coming behind you? What's going through your brain over that first jump? Is it pure concentration in the jump? Is there any fear, or is it just pure excitement looking forward to what's coming ahead?
I think it's just, it all depends on the horse you're riding. You know, if you're riding a horse with a really, really good chance, you're not going to be thinking of the worst case scenario. You're always just thinking of where you want to be, your position, where it's just lining the horse up for the jump, and you don't think what's around you. You can only ride your horse. You can't control what's going on around you. You know what I mean? So you're just concentrating, getting him to the other side of it, really, and making sure you hold your position as best as you can.
Yeah, good stuff.
That's pretty simple enough. Yeah, I was hoping you were going to say you're absolutely terrified when you were coming into that first jump, but obviously
when you hit the ground, balls of steel. A different scenario. But you try. You know, look here. It's like everything. You don't think about the worst case scenario. You want to deal with the. You think more positive about it, and you know, you just try to hold your position there, and you know, and just get the horse from A to B, really, and not complicate things. You know, the more you complicate things, and I think in any sport, the harder it is to achieve the best.
No, for sure. Brian, you've been great with your time. Best of luck on Friday. Thanks a million for talking to us.
Deadly, thanks.
Okay, you've come to the predictions part of the show, where I reigned supreme last week with 3 from 3, predicted that Ireland would win by double figures, predicted the Gunners would go and beat Man United, and of course predicted the Tralee Warriors would beat Temple Og in the biggest basketball games.
Inside information on that one. I'm calling it inside information on that
well,
one.
Well, maybe I had something.
3 for this week. We're talking club championship, the All-Ireland Club Final on Paddy's Day. We're talking about the Gold Cup, and we're also going to predict the rugby. I'm predicting, I've already on the record, Wales Grand Slam. I think they're the best team in the Six Nations at the moment. No shame in losing. We've never won there. Josh Smith's not going to win there again.
No, block that out. Ireland by 7, 2013. Of course Ireland are going to show up and prove that they really are the best team in the Six Nations, and that the England game was just a blip.
And the Gold Cup, I have unfortunately fallen in love with presenting Percy. I love the story, I love the jockey, I love the trainer, I love the fact that it's a Galway horse, and you're never supposed to bet with your heart, but come on, presenting Percy, come on and do it.
Yeah, I'm actually going to go with an outsider in the Gold Cup. Thistle Crack is about 12 or 14 to 1, so a horse I've backed before and like. So, yeah, I'll give you a shout in that one.
I also like that one, actually. Good each way bet for that one. And then for the club finals, it's Curfin versus Crokes. I can't see you predicting against Crokes, but I've also seen that Owen Sheehan is so unbelievably confident that Crokes are going to win. He's like, oh, I assume they're going to be favourites. Completely incorrectly. Curfin are favourites, rightly so. They've got everything about them, and I think they're just about going to squeak it, but I wouldn't be surprised if it's a draw.
Crokes are going to win, and if Gooch comes off, he'll probably kick the winner late on. It'll be a tight one. It'll be a belter of a game. It'll be free-flowing, lovely football. Hope the day is half decent, so we get a great game.
I hope Ballyhale managed to squeak it out. I think this is King Henry announcing himself to the world as the natural successor to Brian Cody. Not that we didn't know it already. I can't see you predicting against the Galway team.
No, I'm going with St. Thomas's from Galway, so I hope they get it done in the day. It'll be two great games. Can't wait to throw myself down in front of the coach and watch both.
Predictions are done. They're in the book. Week 5 of Shot Clock is over. Thanks very much. You can subscribe to our YouTube channel to get that full thing if you missed any of it. Shot Clock every week with Kieran Donnelly on Thursday mornings. Now, it's competition time. We've got a brilliant competition going around the football this week. It's running on OTBAM with thanks to SSE Electricity to launch their new campaign. This is a new era. This is Generation Green. We're giving you the chance to win a pair of premium tickets to the Republic of Ireland's next home game against Georgia. We're giving away a pair every day this week, and then every day's winner goes into the chance to win the overall prize on Friday. Just 4 premium tickets to the game, an overnight stay for all of you in a Dublin hotel, including dinner, and the opportunity for a child to be a flag bearer at the game. To win, we want you to tell us about your favourite Irish goal, who scored it, and why it was so good. You can just tweet us or comment anywhere you're watching this stream, and let us know what you think, and we'll announce the winner before 9:30 every morning. Now, it is 9 o'clock. It is time for us to cross over to Cheltenham and join John Duggan. John, what kind of a day did you have yesterday?
An amazing day in the batting ring. And the broadcasting was okay, so I think it was a good day all round.
What was so amazing about the betting?
The stake I had on my charity bet at €300 at top of the game at 7-2.
That's going to do it for you. So you're massive profit at this point.
Yeah, it's about 66% profit. So I've spent a grand. I've 1,662. So I ever seen the movie Glengarry Glen Ross when Alec Baldwin says you have to have brass balls to sell real estate? It was a brass balls moment.
Mm. So you were on the nose. I didn't realize it wasn't an each way bet.
No, it was a confident bet. So I decided to be brave, and my bravery paid off.
Yeah.
Brave and foolish.
Yeah. There was a period in the race where it looked like, ooh, I'm not sure this is going to happen, and then actually just cruised up the hill.
Yeah, he just needed to get him right over the last two fences, Harry Cobden on top of the game, and he's got a lot of class. He could be a Gold Cup horse next year. I'm delighted that everything that I said actually worked out, and that's the beauty of it. And I was a bag of nerves coming down from the grandstand. It was quite a good moment, I have to say. And I didn't have a cent on it myself, but it doesn't matter because it's up at the charity.
All right, good stuff. Tell me what you got for us today.
I'm going for Mona Lee, and what I'm trying to do here, guys, is make profit. I'm trying to get over 2,000, which is my kind of like profit and loss mark. So I'm going for Mona Lee. I think Mona Lee has to be in the frame in this Ryanair Chase at 250, 9-2. So is an each way bet to nothing if it finishes in the first three. Rachel Blackmore got a good tune out of him in Goran Park last time. He's been to the festival twice. He's been second twice. He's a good jumper. He's a straightforward horse. The form of the Novice Chase last year has worked out with Elegant Escape and Album Photo running well this season. I think Mona Lee is definitely going to be in the frame, and a 9-2. It's a solid each way bet. So of my 500 for charity, about €100 each way, and Mona Lee at 9-2.
Okay, so that's at 250. You also like Bacardi's. A lot of Irish people have been burned by Bacardi's in the past. Big price though, 12-1 today in the 330.
I've been sent to the rum bottle many times, Ger. Bacardi's last year didn't get the run of the race, and then he just took off heading to the last hurdle, and then he fell. I thought he was definitely going to be in the top three. This horse has won twice in Grade Ones over shorter distances, over hurdles, and he never looks like he's going to get there. And then he finds and finds and finds and finds. And I think the Cheltenham Hill is tailor made for him. So if he's there or thereabouts coming up to the last hurdle, and if he gets over it this time, I think he could fly up that hill. I think he's got an each-way chance. Faheen is 11. A horse has not won at that age at the Stairs Hurdle since 1986. But what I have done, and this is an unusual thing, because once again I'm trying to chase profit, I've actually backed two horses in the race, Bacardi's and Petit Mouchoir. Once again, Henry de Bromhead, Rachel Blackmore, 33-1. This horse has never run over a distance more than 2 miles in its career, but it did win a point to point over 3 miles. Last year, the same connections and the same ownership, Michael O'Leary, sent Identity Thief, who finished fourth in the champion hurdle, to the 3 mile Aintree Stairs hurdle, and it won easily. So Petit Mouchoir, what I'm gambling on here is that if Petit Mouchoir can stay, it could have a massive chance given the class that the horse has shown in his earlier career, having finished third in the champion hurdle. It might not stay a yard, but at 33-1, I'm willing to take that chance in the Stairs Hurdle.
Owen Sheehan's eyes have just narrowed in kind of ascent. He's like, I like the look of that.
There's only one metric I judge horses on, folks, and it is the odds. It's the only metric. I don't care about the colour of the horse. I don't care about the sex of the horse. I don't care about form. I don't care about what the ground is like. All I care about is the odds, and I like the sound of 33-1.
You were saying on Twitter yesterday that that I saved your Cheltenham, so surely you should be be caring about what the odds are and what John Duggan says. Surely.
Yeah, you saved my Cheltenham, and you saved my street cred. I may have copied and pasted John Duggan is very hot on a particular horse and forwarded on to multiple
WhatsApp
groups.
Did you go around Dublin with graffiti? John Duggan's cool or whatever.
Yeah. Exactly. I'm pretty popular right now. Not going to brag.
So you like Petit Mouchoir. Are any of them?
No. Nobody else has tipped that this morning, John. Not in the newspapers.
Well, that's where you get the value. Okay, so we've talked about Mona Lee at 250. We've talked about Bacardi's and Petit Mouchoir at 330. To go back in time, Champers on Ice, John. Another booze related. 2:10.
I don't have the whiskey bottle with me today. Yeah, the little small nag, and that's the way for tomorrow night. But look, the Champers is on ice. If I can just get another couple of winners, the champagne will be open. But this is a David Pipe trained horse. He's won the race before with Buena Vista. The horse was third in the Albert Bartlett Grade 1 Novice a few years ago. He did not take defences, a bit like Bacardi's, was not a natural chaser. They're going back over hurdles. He's on a much lower mark. If he is showing his old sparkle, he's got an each way chance at 16-1, Champers on Ice.
Okay, 4:10, Spirit of the Games at 8-1.
Yeah, Dan Skelton, who had a winner here in that mare's race when Benny Dujou fell, His horse, I think it was Roscana, took advantage of it. Has been raving about this horse, Spirit of the Games, for months in all stable tours and discussions. I think they really like it in the yards. They think it's an improving chaser. He was fifth in the county hurdle at the festival here last year on similar conditions. He's going up in trip today. He has adapted well to fences. He's got the cheek pieces on today, which will help him concentrate. And I think he can definitely make the frame at about 8-1, Spirit of the Games.
Okay, and the final one then, it's all guesswork at 9-1.
Yeah, Barry O'Neill is one of the top amateurs in point-to-point riding in Ireland. He hasn't had a Cheltenham Festival winner. He was very close on Tuesday with Discorama. But you see with Jamie Codd and Derek O'Connor, have had plenty of winners. Barry's in the top rank as well. And I think that any horse that he rides must be respected. It's all guesswork. Fell in the Munster National, but was staying on. I think he will get the trip. If Barry can get the horse into a rhythm, which is the key thing around here, it might happen, might not happen. I think at 9-1, it's an each-way chance for Gordon Elliott, who's back, as we said yesterday, now back in the good books after two wins with Tiger Road and Envoy Allen yesterday. So an each-way day, but Monalee, as an each-way bet to nothing at 9-2, I think is a good bet.
Okay, so all of John's tips are up on offtheball.com. We'll have a live racing show at Kildare Village at around about 11:30 this morning when John and Johnny Ward will be back for an update on how the prices and the monies are going. John, John's tips coalesce with...
Monalee, I like the look of in terms of coalescing with tips this morning, John, because you're going up. Katie Walsh basically is also backing Monalee. She had a place or a winner in every single race yesterday, John. So I know you had a good day. She had an insane day.
Four winners. Well, there you go. And sorry, Tony O'Hare as well has gone for Monalee. So look,
all the greats.
All the greats, you know. So here we are.
John, good stuff.
Until all goes wrong.
We'll talk to you later. Cheers. Thanks a million. It's John Duggan giving us some Cheltenham tips and hopefully making us some money this morning. Now, let's move on. I'm delighted to say we've got Shane Williams on the line to help us preview Wales against Ireland. Shane, you're very welcome. Thanks very much for taking the call this morning. We're really looking forward to one aspect that has emerged over the last 24 hours. It looked like Dan Levy was going to be starting for Ireland. The papers this morning, though, are reporting there's a possibility Sean O'Brien gets the nod and gets to start a game against Wales and against Warren Gatland for the very first time since the Lions tour and all the controversy that blew up in the aftermath of that. We're very excited about that. How are you feeling about it?
Yeah, look, I don't think it really matters in Ireland who plays in the back row these days. They have such an abundance of great players. But, yeah, of course, if Sean's back and after all the controversy of the Lions, it brings a bit of extra motivation, I suppose. But as far as Ireland is concerned, both those players you've just mentioned are world-class individuals and collectively with a very good Irish team are capable of causing Wales problems, and if it's Sean, probably Warren Gatland more problems. So, no, look, we knew that this could be a possibility. It's both extremely very good players, and I'm sure whoever plays, they're going to give it their all.
Is Warren Gatland the type of a head coach, Shane, that would get a little bit annoyed by that? And if he gets a little bit annoyed by that, would he pick that player and target him?
No, I don't think so. I think Warren Gatland's got to where he is because he's kind of been able to shrug off things that have happened in the past, things that have been said about him or collectively as a team. You know, at the time, these kind of things do affect you, but a good coach can kind of... It's water off a duck's back, really, because you've got to get on with your job. You've got to make sure that your players are focused and ready. And if the main man, if the coach is rattled and ruffled and rustled, I think, you know, it translates to the players. So, you know, Warren won't be thinking about that at all. I think, you know, I think Levy's a class player as well, that Warren's probably thinking as well, well, that's one less problem to worry about. However, Sean O'Brien's world-class himself. So, you know, they both cancel each other out as a selection, really.
Shane, at the start of the tournament, I thought that Wales were going to win the Grand Slam, and here we are, they're on the verge of it. It just looked to me like they were on a complete roll from last year, where Gatland seemed to be playing the long game while everybody else was very focused on the short-term results. He's been building depth and winning games without necessarily having his frontline starters in place. And then the tournament rolls round, and you've got an abundance of confidence because there's competition for places, there's strength and depth. And even though they had some injuries coming into the tournament, there was a sense that the players who were available were in form. This is about as strong a group that Wales have had, it's possible to say, in the last decade.
Oh, well, certainly within my time, this is the strongest group of you know, players that Wales have had the the fortune of choosing from. You know, when I won the Grand Slam in 05, we had a good side that probably overachieved. No one expected us to do well, and we went on and won that. In 08, we had a very good team, very good squad, but probably nowhere near the strength in depth that Warren Gatland and Wales have at the moment. You know, there's world-class players that aren't even in the squad or haven't even been into the training, into the Welsh training camp and set-up. So, you know, Wales are in a good position. You know, Warren did say that he's obviously focusing on the Six Nations, but he is, you know, he does want a successful World Cup. And it's about building for that as well. And I don't think we've seen the best of Wales yet. I think they've, you know, they've won these games by, you know, almost being in fourth gear, which, you know, I mean that respectfully, because they've had to dig in deep. They've had to perform when they've been asked of by the other team. You know, second half against England, first half against Scotland. You know, really tough second half against France. But, you know, we really haven't seen the flair that I expected to see in the Six Nations yet. Yes, he's made a few changes here and there. And just goes to show he is looking forward and looking to the future for the World Cup. But I think there's still a lot more to come from this squad. And I totally agree. It's without doubt the strongest squad I've seen Wales in my lifetime.
What kind of a performance are you expecting then this weekend? Do you expect a little bit more of that flair to emerge? Like, obviously, Ireland's game plan is built around suffocating the opposition, so it's hard to be particularly full of flair when that happens if Ireland managed to get a foothold. But at the same time, it's the final game, and the teams have tended, these two teams in particular, have tended to play their best rugby in the final game of the Six Nations. So what do you expect?
Yeah, well, I don't expect there to be much flair, if I'm honest. I think Ireland have got this uncanny knack of really spoiling Wales and how they want to play, which, you know, it's a cliche, but it is going to be a real arm wrestle. It's going to be a battle up front in the set pieces. Wales' set pieces, hasn't gone particularly well. Ireland would target that. Both back rows for Wales and Ireland are world class. That's going to be a real mess on the ground, and there's going to be spoiling, and there's going to be, you know, turnovers. So I don't think we're going to see like a slick, high-tempoed game in that sense. But we've got both teams now that have two very good coaches. Tactically, they know exactly what's coming from the opposition. It's just how do you nullify that? So, you know, it is the last game of the Six Nations. Anything can happen. You know, we've seen some really classic Ireland Wales in the final games of the Six Nations could go either way. 05, Wales win the Grand Slam. 09, Ireland win the Grand Slam in the same place in Cardiff. You know, it could be a classic in that sense, but I don't think it's going to be about flair on the weekend. I think it's just about you know, the battle of attrition, isn't it? You know, knowing the tactics and trying to stop them from scoring points and the likes of Sexton doing an O'Gara in 09 and getting a drop goal in the last couple of seconds. So it's going to be a great game and, you know, the matchups and the individual matchups are great.
Are there any specific selection issues ahead of the team announcement that you're expecting? Are there big debates happening in Wales at the moment, or is the team fairly settled?
I'd say the team is fairly settled. I think, you know, we've, apart from the Italy game, Warren Gatland's been pretty consistent. You know, the ongoing debate in Wales since the 60s is who starts at 10. I'm sure that'll continue. You know, if whoever gets selected today, I don't think there'll be many people in Wales that will be disappointed. You know, Anscombe's doing particularly well when he starts a game, and Dan Biggar certainly makes a difference when he comes on. But, you know, people are saying that Dan Biggar perhaps should be starting at 10. It's a big game. You know, he's against World Player of the Year. And I think, you know, for me, that would be the only change. I'd have Dan Biggar starting and everything else keep as consistent as it has been. And then we got a chance.
Mm. And of course it is Warren Gatland's last Six Nations game as Wales coach. I guess we won't write the kind of tributes to him as Wales coach until after the Rugby World Cup, but from an Irish perspective it's probably the last time he'll come up against Warren Gatland in the Six Nations maybe. What is the legacy of Warren Gatland? What does the future hold for this Welsh team?
Oh look, you know, I think Warren Gatland's put this Welsh team in a very good place. Like we've already mentioned, the strength and depth is the best it's ever been. You know, the selection of players is the best it's ever been. The confidence within the group of players is incredible. And Warren keeps saying, you know, we're finding it very difficult to lose at the moment. And that's what I mentioned when I said, you know, they're not really playing their best rugby. However, they haven't really looked like losing games, even when they've been, you know, two scores down. And I've never seen that in a Wales jersey. I've never seen that confident such a confidence within a group of players, and that's what he's left and the legacy he's left. What happens to Warren Gatland now? I don't know. You know, if he goes on and wins the Grand Slam and is successful in the World Cup, you know, I'm sure someone like the All Blacks will come and knock him pretty sharpish. They tend to enjoy taking Welsh coaches away from Wales and making them world champions. And you know, Warren Gatland being a proud Kiwi, maybe that's his next job. Who knows? I'm sure. One thing I will know is that he won't be short of offers.
Yeah, like you mentioned the confidence there that Warren Gatland instills in his teams. How does he do that, Shane? Because like you look at the game against England, that is just a deep reservoir of desire to actually get over the line in that game. And after being there for so long, it's incredible that he still manages to turn out these performances.
Yeah, exactly. And it's difficult. It's something that's taken him a long time to do. You know, he didn't come in and become the Welsh coach in 2008, and already we were like, right, we're going to win every game we've got. We don't know how to lose. It took a long time. You know, he has been in within that squad for, you know, 11 years. He's had the same coaching staff. He's had a majority of the same players with him the whole way. You know, Ali Wynne-Jones, for example, Jonathan Davis. And they've probably just realised now the potential that this team has, thanks to Warren Gatland. And you know, when I was playing, if we'd lose a big game, we used to be the hard lines team. We should have won. We didn't do this right, but oh, never mind. We'll have them next time. If Wales lose now, it's like, how do we lose that? We shouldn't be losing these games, you know. Right, we win the next 12 on the bounce, and that's just what confidence and desire brings to you, really. And Warren is a confident guy. You know, you've only got to look at the start of the Six Nations. We win France away and we win the Grand Slam. Now he's one game away from doing that, and everyone giggled when he said that. But you know, Warren Gatland didn't, and neither did the Welsh team, and that's what he's brought. And I really thoroughly enjoyed my time underneath him, but I would still love to be playing now under him, because the confidence within that team and himself and the coaching staff is just through the roof.
Yeah, Shane, enjoy the game. Thanks a million for taking our call.
Thanks, guys. Cheers.
Shane Williams, that was great to have on the show, giving us some thoughts there. It is amazing that Gatland, because so many coaches seem to have a limited lifespan, and the word creeps out that the voice wasn't resonating with the players anymore. And then you look at the greatest coaches of all time, and they had longevity, and they've had the opportunity to build all the structures that they want, and their voice seems not to... It's not the sound of their voice that is the thing that the players don't like.
Hmm. You wonder what it is. What is the culture in an environment where that longevity lasts? There has to be, I think there has to be an element of fear.
Benevolent dictatorship.
Yeah.
Or the opposite of benevolent. Malignant dictatorship.
Potentially. I think there has to be an element of fear that really there is kind of, if you're not in the good books of that head coach, you're not going to sulk, because the sort of veneer of that head coach is so strong and it is so everlasting that you must improve yourself and you must prove yourself to that head coach. And there's an element of fear in that, and I think that's, I don't know what Warren Gatland has done, we haven't been on the inside of the Welsh camp, but I'd imagine there's an element of that.
Just after 9:17 this morning on Thursday's OTBAM, packed show so far and loads more to come your way. We've had the Shot Clock with Kieran Donahue and 5 minutes with Brian Cooper with John Duggan and Johnny Ward live from day 3 of Cheltenham. If you missed that, you can always scroll back. We heard Owen's collection of tips from across the newspapers as well. That's live now on offtheball.com. We also brought you a brand new segment, The Beef is Real, recapping Sean O'Brien's 2017 Lions feud with Warren Gatland ahead of them potentially, hopefully, facing each other this Saturday. We also spoke to the Welsh legend Shane Williams just there now. A reminder, you can always listen to the show every morning on offtheball.com, just like a breakfast sports radio show. Hit listen, minimise and go about your morning.
The Sun Stayers hurled the highlight on day 3 of the Cheltenham Festival. That's off at 3:30. The day's racing begins with the JLT Novices Chase at 1:30. Willie Mullins can take a step towards recapturing the trainer's title today. After drawing a blank on day 2, Mullins has plenty of contenders racing today. Voodoo runs in the JLT Chase. He'll saddle Footpad and Undershow in the Ryanair Chase. Faheen and Bob Home run in the Stayers Hurdle. My Sister Sarah goes in the Mayor's Novices Hurdle. The Liverpool manager Jurgen Klopp believes the club are back where they belong. The Reds advance to the quarterfinals of the Champions League with a 3-1 victory over Bayern Munich last night. Sadio Mane broke the deadlock in the tie following a goalless first leg draw at Anfield. With a brilliant solo effort, Joel Matip's own goal levelled proceedings before half time, but Liverpool went in front through Virgil van Dijk, a brilliant header before Mane put the icing on the cake. Klopp believes beating their fellow 5-time champions confirms the Reds are back at Europe's top table.
So much space for improvement still, but so many good signs tonight. So first half, a difficult game. Both teams full of respect for each other. Obviously, a lot of tactical things, closing down, closing spaces, all that stuff. Challenges, prepare them. And all that's how it is sometimes. Good teams play against each other, and then fantastic goal from us. I know, I'm from Germany. I know how difficult it is to win against Bayern. I'm 51, and it feels like in all the 51 years, Bayern was in kind of a semi-final or final of a Champions League or another European competition. So, no, it's big. It was a big step for us. Huh? It's for us, it's really important that we show this club is back on the landscape.
Arsenal must overturn a two-goal deficit when they host Rennes in the second leg of their Europa League round of 16 tie later. The French side beat the Gunners 3-1 in the first leg last week. The good news is, though, that the Gunners can call on Alexander Lacazette after UEFA reduced his ban to 2 matches following his sending off against Bate Borisov. Lacazette was initially handed a 3-match suspension for elbowing an opponent in frustration. The French international served the first ban in the second leg of the tie with Bate before missing the away leg against the French club. While Chelsea have already 1 foot in the Europa League quarterfinals, they prepare to face Dynamo Kiev, leading 3-0 from the first leg of that tie. Gareth Southgate has asked Ireland fans not to be too hard on Declan Rice. The West Ham midfielder has been called up for England's Euro 2020 qualifiers, having recently switched his international allegiance from the Republic of Ireland. Rice was born in London. His grandparents hailed from Douglas in County Cork. He won 3 Republic of Ireland caps in friendlies, but decided to ditch Ireland after turning down call-ups for competitive matches. Southgate says dual nationality is a complex issue and fans need to be mindful of that.
Yeah, I think it's increasingly the case. If you look at any of our junior age groups now, over 50% of the players have dual nationality. Some can play for more than 2 countries. So increasingly that's a complex decision. It's a complex landscape. I know people are questioning the rules, but at the moment the rules are the only guide we can all work from. Once young boys are capped very young, then it becomes a very complex situation. And some of those situations, we've had players transfer to us, and in others, like Iwobi, Zaha, Ampadu, players have gone to other countries.
Ronan Curtis could miss the Republic of Ireland's Euro 2020 qualifiers against Gibraltar and Georgia. A freak accident resulted in the striker requiring emergency surgery on his finger. He didn't feature for Portsmouth in a 3-2 win away to Walsall in League One earlier this week. He was leaving his home when a gust of wind blew the front door closed on one of his fingers. His manager, Kenny Jackett, said it was windy down in Portsmouth and the wind caught the door as he was leaving the house to meet up with us. According to his mum, the top of his finger was hanging off and they sewed it back on with plastic surgery.
They sold it back on, because I read earlier that he'd lost it. But
really?
Okay, great.
Jackett said they sold it back on. Whether or not he is the man in the know on that particular instance is unknown, though. The Ireland legend Brian O'Driscoll feels Jordan Larmour has work to do if he wants to become the long-term replacement for Rob Kearney, the veteran fullback forced out of the late win over France with a calf complaint. Kearney expected to be recalled to the team for Saturday's Six Nations match with Wales and Cardiff. Head coach Joe Schmidt due to unveil a starting 15 this afternoon. Sean O'Brien also in line for a start, having missed out last week completely. Munster lock Tadhg Byrne could be handed his Six Nations debut as a replacement for Ian Henderson, who's reportedly struggling with an injury. The subject of fullback remains a talking topic this week going into the game, and O'Driscoll reckons Larmour's size could work against him long term.
I think there's the difference between Robbie Henshaw and Rob Kearney and Jordan Larmour is that comfort. And I think it's the same the country over, irrespective of coaching staff or players or fans or media like us, that we are more comfortable with the bigger men, and particularly with Rob back there and the history of his ability in the air. You know, you feel that with Robbie as well, even though he hasn't had to prove it for a number of years. I think Jordan's not there. Mm. And will he get there? I hope so. But it's definitely the part of his game, if he wants to play in the 15 jersey, that he's going to have to work on most, because as a smaller man, you will get targeted.
Celebrate as well. Shocked and Aguelga, we have a special Pod Craelte on the website offtheball.com. It features Pat Lamb, David Goff, Naomi Carroll and Chrissy McCaig, as well as some of Team Off the Ball using their Cúpla Focal. Head on over to the website offtheball.com. There you'll find it.
Yours is the best of the in-house Cúpla Focals.
Really?
Mara Trasa, obviously.
Was there a power ranking done?
A native Gaelgor, so like, wins hands down.
Yeah.
Your second, Tommy's third.
Well, Mara Trasa, I didn't realise, thinks in Irish. She actually, her thought process and her dreams are in Irish.
Arrascoelia, yeah.
Yeah, which is bizarre. I can't get my head around it.
Sorry, Enda Coll is third and Tommy's fourth.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
That's a fall from grace for Tommy.
There you go.
Privately educated Tommy. He bought his Gaeilge.
He's privately educated.
What? Is that? What? Is he?
Bad. Wow.
Well, of course there's nothing wrong with being privately educated.
Were you in a boarding school? Okay.
No, that's, we've been told in Ireland.
It was a boarder school, not a boarding school.
Okay, fair enough.
Wow. Yeah, things got nasty pretty quickly here.
That was a confusion of Tommy's Gaeilge.
Okay, it's brilliant. There's loads of great stuff. Pat Lamb talking about Irish culture, and his is the only interview us Berla.
Yeah, Chrissy McKay uses a couple of Focal Berla as well. You see, I think it's really accessible because a lot of the problem with the Irish language over the last, not just this decade, but going back years, it's always seemed inaccessible, and Irish language speakers have had this unfair caricature that they are elitist and they don't want people unless they're Irish or perfect. This is something to be accessible for those who are completely fluent in Irish, have the highest standard like Mór Trasa, or someone who just has a couple of focal like Pat Lamb, who tried to harness the power of understanding and appreciating what that culture means. So yeah. Hopefully there's something in there for people who speak Irish, hopefully there's something in there for people who don't speak Irish, and then people who just like to hear the language.
And it's up on our highlights feed, and you can get it on all of our social channels as well, and we'll tweet some bits from it over the coming days, because we're coming towards the end of Seachtain na Gaeilge. I think it finishes at Paddy's Weekend, is that right?
Seachtain na Gaeilge never finishes, Ger.
Hey, good point.
Lives forever.
It is a fortnight. It is the stereotypical Irish week. That's actually 2 weeks.
Yeah, we run out of Seachtain na Gaeilge.
Alright, all this week on Off the Ball AM, we're giving you the chance to win a pair of premium tickets to Ireland against Georgia. If you missed your chance today, don't worry, you'll have another chance tomorrow. And our overall winner on Friday is going to be the person who walks away with 4 premium tickets to the game, a hotel stay for everybody in Dublin, including dinner, and the opportunity for one of the children to be a flag bearer at the game. We're going to give you another chance to win tomorrow morning. It's all with thanks to SSE Airtricity and their new campaign. This is a new era. This is Generation Green. Congratulations to Mark Walsh, who this morning said, "Best Irish goal, McAteer against Holland in 2001. Best atmosphere I've ever experienced at an Irish game. And I've been to World Cups and Euros, so I don't say it lightly." It was the old Lansdowne Road. That's one of the last few big wins we had at the old Lansdowne Road before they tore it down and turned it into the bowl that is the Aviva.
I'd like to know if anybody actually got to Lansdowne Road and to Slane that day, because obviously McAteer was famously offered to fly down.
The chopper.
Yeah. Didn't believe it was Bono. I wonder, did anybody actually make that trip? That's the listener story I want to hear.
I'd say a fair few did. If memory serves, it's like a 3 o'clock kickoff.
That wasn't Celtic Tiger time though, was it?
Well, there was a, like,
it was the early shoots.
Purring.
The green, yeah, exactly.
People had started to come home.
The late 90s had actually been a kind of sense of, I think the Celtic Tigers named in the late 90s, and then, like, it's not proper boom, boom time, but it's getting there. Life's good. The .com bubble has yet to burst for the first time.
Celtic Tiger times were ridiculous.
That sounds right.
I remember All-Ireland Final Sundays. One. We couldn't fix games for the home ground in Athena because helicopters would use it to land there.
So people
could go down and watch the game and leave their helicopters on the front pitch.
That is bollocks.
But we went to Johnstown Park.
Right. Cheltenham show at 11:30 coming your way. Live from Cheltenham, we'll have John Duggan and Johnny Ward with us. Hopefully Johnny Ward will have a pair of headphones by that stage. The hurling show is live from 3 o'clock this afternoon. And then tonight on Off the Ball, Mór Trasa, Ní Cailleagh and Shane Stapleton are hosting John Giles, Ray Houghton on Liverpool's win at Bayern, Liam Hogan on what needs to change for Offaly hurling, and football with Mike Quirk. Also tonight from 10 o'clock, Off the Brawl will be live looking at UFC London this weekend, and also looking at Katie Taylor and everything that's happening in the States in terms of boxing. Ronan is over there in Philadelphia heading to the Conlon fight, and I think also managing to make the Katie Taylor fight as well. We're back tomorrow morning from 7:45 a.m. Alan Quinlan, Ronan O'Gara, John Duggan and Johnny Ward from Cheltenham, and much more besides. What a busy 24 hours here on Off the Ball. Stay tuned, share, like, rate, comment, get involved, and we'll see you real soon. Good luck. So if you like this, you'll probably also like OTB AM, Ireland's only sports breakfast show. Subscribe to the OTB AM podcast stream or catch the show live on YouTube, Twitter, Facebook or offtheball.com every morning from 7:45 a.m.